This is Ozarks at Large. It's about 25 minutes before 8 p.m. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is KUAF's membership director, Lee Wood. You've had a long day.
We have had a long day, but that's how the fundraiser is, you know. It's fun.
That's right.
It's fun.
That's right. This is the spring fundraiser when people can make contributions to KUAF. Right now, during this hour, we encourage them to go online.
Absolutely. You can go to supportkuaf.com and make a donation and support the public radio station that you know you listen to every day and get this fantastic service from. And you can join a community of thousands of people who give contributions each year. Some of them give monthly, some of them give annually, some of them give every fundraiser. But the most important thing is that they give, and all of those people's donations together help us bring programs like Ozarks at Large.
That's right, or Fresh Air, or Performance Today. Now, true or false, you're the membership director, you will know this. True or false, it's just a handful of contributors who give most of the money.
Oh, false. Absolutely. We do have a leadership society that give gifts of $1,000 or more, but the vast majority of our membership give gifts, in the average, is about $120. It's that huge group of people that that really make this broad base of support that the station relies on. And we like it that way. You know, that way we're not dependent on a grant that may go away or a corporation that may decide they don't want to give to us the next year. It makes it very reliable, makes it stable, and it lets us know that the community that we're serving also appreciates it and gives back to us. So it's this great symbiotic relationship.
So we're not dependent on just one or two interests.
No, not at all. And it frees you up. I mean, that way as well, we get to go be a reflection of the community that supports us rather than maybe have to cover things that someone tells us to cover.
That's right.
We don't have to worry about that.
For the record, I've been doing this show for more than 24 years, never been told by any entity that you have to cover this.
No, and it's really...
A lot of people want us to cover things.
Oh, sure.
We think this would be interesting, but we've never been given a command.
Well, and that's the beauty of public radio and, you know, not having commercials and being able to go chase down stories and cover things that we think are of worth to the community. That's what we're here to do. And I think we do it well, and the community lets us know twice, three times a year that we do it well. So it's a long week, but it's a fun week because we get to remind ourselves of that.
It is. You know, that is the thing, that there is this, now I'm going to get all Frank Capra on you.
Do it.
But there's this sense of community that we get. We do put in some long days, but you hear people excited about something they heard or something that could be happening.
Oh, yeah.
And there is this communal effort that when I was asking for money this morning on Morning Edition, someone from Fayetteville called in. I read her name. Someone else from Elkins who knew her called in. And you had this real sense of community.
Yeah, it's great. And then, I was with the volunteers. Mm-hmm. The volunteers knew the people that were calling in, said, oh, yeah, that's great. It's good to talk to you. It changes the dynamic of the station because we have people from the listening community come in and help us. It's a fantastic time, and I really enjoy it. And I love raising money for this station.
SupportKUAF.com. If you would rather talk to a human being, wait till 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. But if you want to contribute right now, easily, safely, securely online, SupportKUAF.com.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Lee.
Thanks, Kyle.
Henry McLeish is a former First Minister of Scotland, former member of British Parliament, and is a visiting professor at the University of Arkansas. He has been coming to the United States for over 30 years, and to the U of A for 10. He's traveled to more states in the nation than many Americans, 42. McLeish spoke last month at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute on the role of learning in modern society, and he made comparisons between the United States and European countries. I spoke with McLeish prior to his talk last month. He says education is a passion of his and believes that in any country, Education should be an absolute right, because society, an economy, and an individual cannot prosper without education. He says there are significant differences in education between the European Union countries and the United States.
And if I take my own country, the United Kingdom, then clearly we have a different attitude at times, a different approach. And whilst I consider that some of your elite universities are quite simply the best in the world in terms of research, in terms of innovation, in terms of high-quality learning, I think that throughout America there's at times not enough investment in the public school level, which we do considerably more in the United Kingdom. But the key is this, that, you know, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And quite frankly, it's the most renewable resource that we've got. I mean, people talk about energy and they talk about wind and they talk about sun. But at the end of the day, here's a generational resource that if we invest in, will pay huge dividends, not only for society, but for the individual itself and the economy. And of course, we live in a world where, I use the word advisedly, where there is a lot of ignorance. There's a lot of intolerance. So in terms of community, in terms of society, I think education is such a valuable role to play.
Well, you mentioned a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And without a mind, you wouldn't have, you know, wind energy and you know, all the things that you kind of followed up that statement with. I mean, you have to have an intelligent mind in order to come up with those innovative things.
Very much so, because health and education are key to a civilized society. Health is a right. Education should be a right. But also we talk about learning. So it's this important thing that often we talk about preschool, we talk about school, we call it primary school, I think it's your early year school, and then we have secondary and we have college and we have universities. But with that, there's a whole new era developing in terms of lifelong learning. We cannot, as a modern society, entertain the idea that we have to cut back on education. For me, education and health should always be sacrosanct in relation to cutbacks in resources, cutback in investment. If you cut back on health and if you cut back on education, you will not be the kind of society that you aspire to be.
What are some of the biggest differences between education in the United States and in Europe?
Often in the United Kingdom, we're criticized, for example, on healthcare as well, about it being socialized medicine. It's not a term of endearment that Americans use. We're also considered a nanny state, in quotes, and also a welfare state. But what we do is we have a different culture and we've evolved differently. But we actually just make sure that in cultural terms, education is for all. There are no barriers, class or income. Education is the key to a modern civilized society. So therefore, we invest more public funds in education than as happens in the United States. And as I said, my perception is, and I never wish to be discourteous to my hosts, but I think the elite universities are a great deal of excellent community colleges, great deal in your public schooling. But I sometimes feel that in certain parts of America, the public schools are not invested in as much as possible. People think that, well, children will only be going for a job. They don't need to extend themselves in education. That's a wrong philosophy to have, because what I think all legislators must have, all people that want to inspire the public, they want to put education at the very, very top of the agenda. And that's, I think, the essential difference between the Scandinavian or Nordic countries, the Germans, Netherlands as well, and the United Kingdom. Education is such a highly prized priority, which requires public investment. And of course, in America, the kind of individual liberty, economic freedom issue means that sometimes the state is not welcome, congressional involvement is not welcome, and it's often left to other people to provide. And when you consider the inequalities in the United States, there's a lot of people at the poorer end of the economic and social spectrum that need more investment. And at the end of the day, surely a society is civilized when it actually values every citizen to the same extent, invests in their education to the same extent, and allows them to realize their potential as individuals.
Overcome that income barrier, for sure.
Indeed.
You've been coming to the United States. I mean, you've been teaching here at the University of Arkansas off and on for 10 years. Why do you keep coming back?
I've been coming now to America for nearly 30 years. And America is an astonishing country, fascinating country. And sometimes I think it's a bit quirky in relation to congressional dysfunctionality. But nevertheless, it's a fascinating country to visit. And I've been very privileged. I have friends on the eastern and western seaboard in San Francisco and in terms of New York. But I have a lot of close political friends in Oklahoma and in Arkansas. And I've taught in both. But there's a special charm about places like Oklahoma and Arkansas. I have dear friends here. And when you can come and visit, you can see America, meet friends, and also teach and engagement with the students, that's an ideal mix for me. So I've enjoyed it in the past, and I look forward to many years in the future.
What's one of your favorite things about our area?
Well, I often get into trouble talking about food. But apart from that, I like the warmth of the people, and the students are lively and engaging. And of course, because I come from a different culture, there are huge contrasts in when we discuss issues like gun control, the question of the death penalty, the question of abortion, the impact of religion. So it's good to come to a nation where things are so very, very different. It livens the mind, it creates a partnership or an engagement with the students, and that is always very, very enjoyable.
Continuing to talk about differences, we're in an election year, and we're already in the heat of having, you know, these political ads, and, you know, it's made even national news, some of these, you know, slammings of gubernatorial candidates. And I know that you have run for various elected positions in the United Kingdom. What is the election? How is that kind of campaign process? How is it different in Arkansas and in the United Kingdom?
Well, this is one of the great areas which baffles me in the United States, why the public and politicians want to be continually electioneering. You know, you have your House seats in Congress, it's 2 years, and you have your Senate seats for 6 years. But the great difference is that we just don't spend the money that you spend. I mean, in the United Kingdom, when I was standing for the Westminster Parliament in London, I would spend an absolute maximum of $16,000 for the whole of my election campaign. Two things. One is it's a short campaign of 3 to 4 weeks and it's all over. I think that would be very welcomed in the United States. And secondly, there is a ban on people advertising on radio and television. And of course, when you get to the presidential elections in the US, where you spend maybe nearly $2 billion, I have to say with the greatest courtesy, that's an obscene amount of money to be spending. To what end? So I believe a lot of reform is required in the US. I think the two-party system is currently failing the United States. There's a lot of dysfunctionality. And I think a lot of people will tend to get disillusioned with politics if that continues. Now, politics is not brilliant at times in Europe or in the United Kingdom. But there seems to me that finance has got too much of a grip on United States politics. The idea of lobbying to the extent. And I always remember the Gettysburg Address by Abraham Lincoln, one of the 270 words, one of the finest speeches. And he said that government should be of the people, by the people, for the people. I don't think he talked about lobbyists at that point. And I just wonder at times who's been represented. And in fact, some of the illustrations I give when I speak to colleagues, they just simply cannot believe that America's wasting so much money in a system that often doesn't attract more than 50% of the population to vote, which I think is a testament to the fact that it's not working.
Right. Wow. You have served on Parliament. Do you remember your first day? What was your first day like as a rookie?
Well, in the House of Commons, I mean, the House of Commons, of course, has been sitting on that site in an administrative sense for nearly 1,000 years. So your first visit to Parliament on the first day you've been elected, to be elected as a public servant is a great thrill. But when you're in Parliament for the first day, and that was way back in 1987, I spent 14 years in London, you were overawed by the pomp and splendour of the Houses of Parliament in Westminster. And then, of course, you knew that it was a very different level of politics from city politics that I had been involved in before. But the great thrill, we have what we call a maiden speech. It's the first time you speak after you've been elected. And I spoke, I think, at 1 a.m. in the morning, because at that time we did overnight sessions. But it was just the thrill of speaking where Winston Churchill had spoken, and many other great parliamentarians. Not that I was similar to them, but there's just this great sense of excitement. So these were my first recollections of being in a big political place with people that had been there and who had been giants of politics. And here I was on these green benches and making a speech, whereas maybe 50 or 60 years ago, Winston Churchill had been making speeches at that particular time. So.
Yeah.
It was a great opportunity, great excitement. And that's why I think for people who are sometimes disillusioned by politics, being in public service is still an excellent thing to be doing. You know, for young people, for older people, that serving at whatever form is still a very real reward for the individual and a help to society.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you. Henry McLeish is a former First Minister of Scotland and former member of British Parliament. He is also a visiting professor at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large.